Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
I think when you're the video guy, and if you're pretty savvy at what you do, and you know the ins and outs, if something goes haywire with the video, you can fix it, and nobody ever even knows anything was wrong. If you're the ops, and as much as we want to control everything that we can control, sometimes things can go haywire, and it's completely out of your realm. Sometimes it can be out there for the world to see. And that can be tough because you never know. You know, you might have your university president or chancellor on a trip. You might have an important donor on the trip, but you've always got to handle it the right way. You know, just would encourage people to stay even keel and not lose, you know, because at the end of the day, you can't get rattled because you don't want your head coach to get rattled.
Thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches Podcast. This is Adam Gordon, and today we are joined by Lucas McKay, assistant coach of UMKC. Lucas just got the job at UMKC. Before that, he spent almost 15 seasons with Brad Brownell, including a long stint at Clemson, Wright State, and UNC Wilmington. 15 years is a long time for any relationship, and Lucas talks about navigating and evolving his relationship with Coach Brownell, his experience at Clemson and in various different administrative roles, how he kept from being pigeonholed and continued to grow his responsibilities, and now the adjustment into being an assistant coach and being on the floor and recruiting. Really some great insight. We appreciate Lucas for being on. We appreciate you guys for listening. Please subscribe to the podcast. Please visit us at risingcoaches.com and sign up for a membership if you haven't already. Membership sales are off the charts since we launched. A ton of value for being a part of the organization, and we encourage you to visit our website and learn more about the membership process. Now, without further ado, Lucas McKay. Lucas, thanks for joining us today. How are you, buddy?
Hey, Adam. Thanks so much for having me on, man. Doing great. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good. It's good to catch up with you. We go way back, Lucas, way back to the old stomping grounds in Clemson, Tiger Town.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It just seems like yesterday we were sharing an office together in there in the video cave.
Yeah, no question. So I'm excited to have you on. You're like, I feel like you're one of the OGs of many things in basketball. You served on the NABC operations panel for the last 2 years, I believe, and you've really kind of been in administrative spots, and you've moved around, you know, from different titles, from ops to director of recruiting to video coordinator to administrative assistant for the last 12 years. And just this past offseason, took a job as an assistant coach at UMKC with your boy Billy Donlin. So congrats on that. And just kind of want to talk about that process and that journey and, you know, some of the things you've learned along the way.
Yeah. No, appreciate the kind words. You know, I think the first thing, I've been fortunate to work with and around really, really good people that have really helped me grow in this profession and kind of show me the ins and outs of how things work, and then, you know, also how you need to conduct yourself on a daily basis. I think those are all really, really important things that I think sometimes that we take for granted when we're in this business, but at the end of the day, it does, you know, just always got to conduct yourself in a professional way. Been fortunate to wear a lot of different hats on the administrative side of the business, and I wouldn't have traded my path for anything. I think this spring when you're presented with an opportunity and you have to make a decision, I think, you know, just what I kept coming back to was like, hey, that when I got into this business, you know, as a 18-year-old college freshman as a student manager at UNC Wilmington, I said, hey, what was the ultimate goal? And the ultimate goal was to be able to become a college assistant and, you know, have a chance to have a crack at that. But again, just wearing a lot of different hats, going back to administrative assistant at Wright State when you're, you know, carrying, you know, a lot of the administrative load for the program, to being a video coordinator at Clemson where you're helping with the technology and scouting and making sure we're on the up and up with all that stuff. And, you know, then at the same time too, moving into the ops role, which was an incredible experience, getting to be on the front lines of a lot of different things and just making sure the program is flowing smoothly on a day-to-day basis. And then, after the 17-18 season, Coach Brunell was, you know, awesome, came to me and said, hey, you know, would like to transition you to this other role to continue to help our program, which was kind of a new position. It's kind of taken off at the Power Five level, and that's director of recruiting development, recruiting operations, whatever you want to call it, but just kind of overseeing the day-to-day administrative side of recruiting for the program. But
let's come back to that. Let's come back to that transition to recruiting. I want to back up and start like at the beginning. You mentioned like when you got into it, your goal was to, you know, have a crack at being a Division I assistant. And so you started as a manager. Like how, at what age did you know you wanted to coach?
Yeah, it's so funny. I kind of, probably my junior year of high school, if I had to pin it down, just, you know, and it's funny. And I, you know, look, I was not a great player. I was fortunate to make my high school team. But growing up in Raleigh, North Carolina, where obviously basketball, college basketball at that, is kind of held on a pedestal a little bit. And being around that every day and just seeing that, and I was like, man, this would be something really cool to be a part of and have a chance to do it as a career, not knowing if that would ever even happen. So I think my junior year, you know, I kind of honed in on UNC Wilmington, and, you know, I knew they were a program certainly on the rise, and, you know, Coach Brunell had just taken over the program in 2002-2003 season, even though he had been an assistant there for 8 years. So, you know, that was 2 hours from home. It was at the beach. I was like, hey, just, you know, see where this goes. And I'll never forget, you know, Coach Marty McGillen, who's now an assistant coach at Longwood, was on staff there at the time, and he was in charge of the managers. And I'll never forget going by the office six or seven times and just like, hey, coach, I'm here, you know, put me to work. I'll do whatever you need me to do. You need me here at 5 a.m. to sweep the floors, do the laundry, I'll do it, you know. And I think maybe about after the seventh time, he figured out like, hey, this kid might not be going away. We might as well try to get some work out of him. But no, it was great. And, you know, obviously that staff with Coach Brunell, Coach McGillen, Coach Billy Donlin, Coach Byron Jones, who's at Air Force now, and then Coach Jimmy Garrity was the director of ops at the time. He's now the head women's coach at Wofford College in Spartanburg, South Carolina. What an incredible staff to learn from as a young guy trying to get into business. So, you know, I always kept a little log and just, you know, things that observations and wrote down and just tried to learn from it, you know, both good and bad. Obviously, you know, you're in this business long enough, you're going to make some mistakes. So I just tried to learn and grow from every opportunity and just try to get better every day. And fortunately was able to, when Coach Brunell left Wilmington in 2006 to go to Wright State, I just completed my junior year. So I actually got kind of my first take to the coaching thing. After that, I left being a manager and was hired as a varsity assistant coach, coincidentally enough, by another UNCW former manager, Travis Pate, there in the Wilmington area a little bit, and got to be a varsity assistant and get on the floor for the first time and get a taste of that. So that that's an experience I wouldn't have traded for anything else. That was really cool to get on the floor and get to work with guys and do scouting reports and, you know, travel to see other high school games to try to get a game plan together. And I would encourage anybody who's, you know, trying to break into coaching, go be a varsity assistant. I think there's just so much you can learn and how you interact with kids and other coaches and being a part of the staff. I think that was very valuable. And coincidentally enough, after that year, Coach Brunell had a spot open up at Wright State and just said, hey, you know, want to get you up here. You'll be able to get your master's and, you know, help our program a great deal administratively. And that was an awesome experience. We didn't really have a quote unquote secretary per se. So that all that, you know, kind of fell on my plate a little bit to navigate all that, and, you know, doing expense reports and doing stat work and doing all that. But plus being able to be around basketball as well. So it was awesome. You know, as a guy from the South, I'd never been to the Midwest much. So that was a little bit of an adjustment, but it was really good. And I wouldn't have traded that for anything in the world. That experience certainly just helped me grow. And, you know, obviously got to be around, you know, Coach Dowling was still on staff there. Coach McGillen had transitioned to something else, but it got to be around other guys. Victor Evong, who was a good player at UNC Wilmington, was on staff there. Mike Winecki, who was a tremendous player at Richmond, who, you know, worked with for, you know, 10 years after that between Wright State and Clemson. He's now in the G League with the Lakeland Magic, doing a great job with them. And then Scott Woods, too, who was an industry veteran. He was in the ops role, and, you know, he really was great and gave me a lot of freedom to do a lot of different things and just continue to grow. So,
well, again,
I know it goes – yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we talk about this all the time on the show is like, you know, you mentioned that 1 year you spent at the high school level as an assistant. Like, that's so valuable. You know, if you're trying to get in, you're going to have to be in support staff roles for a long time. But if you got an opportunity to get on the floor and coach at a young age, even if it's only for one season, like, you got to get your feet wet. You got to jump in the deep end and get a little experience there so that, you know, when your number gets called, you know, which may be a year from then and maybe 15 years from then, like, you at least have some sort of experience to draw from.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think just be able to get on the court and teach and be able to, you know, sit down with guys and watch tape. I think that's so valuable. Because, you know, different players and different people communicate in different ways. So really figuring out how to communicate with different guys just to make sure the message of the head coach is getting across. I think that's really important. A lot of times when you're in those individual meetings, it's, you know, you as the assistant fighting for what your head coach wants in those meetings. As you know. So, no, I think anytime you can get on the court, whether it's high school, AAU, you know, some guys are fortunate to, you know, help with different national teams, either domestically here in the United States or they're international. You know, highly, highly encourage you to do that whenever you can at a young age just to get some experience and, you know, and really help yourself become comfortable in your own skin as a coach.
So you coached, I think, 16 years with Brad Brownell. Is that right? Did I do the math right?
It's 16 years, 15 seasons. Yeah,
okay.
I think
that, yeah. Okay, so 15 seasons with Coach Brownell. Let's talk a little bit about that relationship. Obviously, you met him as his manager, and anyone that knows you knows that your work ethic is off the charts. So I'm sure you kind of ingratiated yourself to him through your hard work and over time. I'm sure he got to know you. And Coach Brownell, for anyone that doesn't know him, is great with, like, any manager or anybody in the program. He's not one of these guys that, like, you're going to be a manager and he's not going to know your name for 2 years. Like, he knows everybody in his gym. And so I'm sure you guys got close that way. But how did you – like, this is a deal for a lot of people, is when you work for somebody as a manager – and then you take on a different role and you get promoted, you know, a lot of people get stuck even though their title changes. That person's expectation doesn't change or the relationship doesn't change and they still get kind of pigeonholed. And that wasn't the case for you and Coach Brownell from my perspective. Maybe you have a different feel from it.
Yeah.
But, like, you guys, you continue to grow in terms of your responsibility and in terms of your relationship. How did that transpire? Was that just him taking the lead on that? Did you guys have some open conversations about how your role and expectations would change for you? Maybe talk a little bit about how that relationship between the two of you guys evolved.
Yeah, no, it was great. And, like, I'm incredibly grateful to Coach Brownell for all the opportunities he's provided, you know, me and my family, quite frankly, with over the years. Because, hey, at the end of the day, like, these jobs are not easy to come by, and they don't just grow on trees. So I've never been ungrateful of that in any way possible. In fact, probably since I've left, I've probably tried to show even more gratitude. Hopefully he feels that way, at least, of, you know, just appreciation of, you know, being in this profession and doing it the right way with, you know, class and integrity. I think that, you know, he's certainly on a pedestal in this industry with how he's operated that way. And I think it says a lot about him. But I think, too, you know, just having worn a lot of different hats for him, I think that comfort level obviously was at a really high level and kind of could – I think where it probably helped the most was when we would have new assistants or new people come on staff, just able to help them in their own transition. Like, hey, you know, how is coach expecting this or so being able to help them. And hopefully coach would say the same thing. Hopefully that helped everything go smoother with new people coming on board, new players coming on board, you know, could chat with them about, you know, just coach's expectation level and standard for how things needed to operate on a daily basis, how you needed to practice, how you needed to be mentally ready and different things of that nature. I think, too, you know, just having worn a lot of different hats, kind of sometimes just had to adjust. You know, obviously the ops, for anybody that's been an ops or an aspiring ops, you know, the one thing I'd say to you, you know, that you carry a lot of the brunt of the non-basketball stuff. And I think when you're ops, I always like to compare it this way, and maybe this is right or wrong, but I think when you're the video guy, and if you're pretty savvy at what you do and you know the ins and outs, if something goes haywire with the video, you can fix it and nobody ever even knows anything was wrong. If you're the ops, and as much as we want to control everything that we can control, sometimes things can go haywire and it's completely out of your realm. Sometimes it can be out there for the world to see. And that can be tough because you never know. You know, you might have your university president or chancellor on a trip. You might have an important donor on the trip, but you've always got to handle it the right way. You know, just would encourage people to stay even keel and not lose, you know, because at the end of the day, if you can't get rattled because you don't want your head coach to get rattled. And during the season, I think we all have enough on our minds in terms of, you know, game preparation and recruiting and, you know, making sure our players are in the right place mentally, ready to compete and different things of that sort. But just making sure that things go smoothly, there's a plan. If plan A doesn't go well, what's plan B? You know, just having the forward thinking to think about that. And that's one thing that coach always encouraged me to do was, hey, you know, be forward thinking, have a plan B. If this doesn't go well, you know, how are we reacting? How are we getting, how are we still getting, you know, back on plan A from plan B if plan A needs to take a diversion. So just, and being prepared, you know, making sure that things are in order. I don't think any head coach likes to be surprised with information or, you know, something going on in the program or, you know, with the players. So just always being forthright and honest about what is going on. If you hear something, you know, just taking care of, and then taking care of the little things, making sure that, you know, if it's for a recruiting visit, you know what I mean? Making sure all the meetings are set and we've prepped everything and talked to the people and making sure that they know, you know, how important this is. I think we all know anytime you get a kid on campus, you know what I mean? You got to be prepared to show them what it's really going to be like on your campus and show them a good time. So those were things that, you know, just detail things that we took a lot of pride in. And I owe a lot to coach for helping instill that in me at a young age.
Well, and to your credit, you know, you mentioned the honesty part, and you mentioned, you know, sometimes things happen in the film room, and if you're a savvy video coordinator, you can fix it, and no one will notice. And to your credit, I thought you were always super forthright with everything that was going on, you know, within the program, but also, you know, under your umbrella. And, you know, like, everyone's going to screw up in this business, everybody. And, you know, like a lot of people, and this would be my first reaction, is like, let me fix it. Let me try my best to fix it so that, like, coach doesn't notice. And, you know, like, coach is going to notice no matter who you work for. Like, head coaches aren't stupid. You know, they see what's going on in their program. So, like, I was always impressed with your just like, hey, let me just talk this out, talk it through with coach, let them know what's going on, and then I'm going to do the best to, like, make sure that everything goes smoothly from here on out. But, you know, I think probably your and coach's values really, really aligned well. And, you know, I don't know, I'm sure some of that was give and take in your relationship, and maybe some of that you learned from him, but your integrity is something that I think has stood out to everybody that you've been around. So just kind of wanted to commend you on that, Luke.
I appreciate that. And I think, you know, in the world we live in nowadays, I think at the end of the day, and it's not just limited to college basketball. I think it's college athletics in general. You know, a lot of the stuff we do is under the microscope. And I think you got to be really careful with your actions and, you know, how you treat people and how you say it. Not only, you know, what you say, but also how you say it. I think there's still a way where you can say it and still get your point across in a correct way. And at the end of the day, you know, just never compromising who you are as a person or doing anything to embarrass your boss, your program, or even your own family's namesake. I think all those are important.
So over these, 15 seasons with Coach Brownell, I know you've had opportunities in the past to move on, and you've always kind of stayed loyal to Coach Brownell and stuck it out. What's kind of went into like a lot of those decisions? And I know a lot of them are case-by-case basis, but, you know, why so long with Coach B?
Yeah, I think one thing, he's an incredible man, an incredible family man. And, you know, he told me a long time ago, and you're like, hey, you like, if you're happy doing what you're doing, you know, that's not something to mess with. You know, I'm fortunate to have a great family, great wife at home. It's actually her birthday today, so happy birthday, honey.
Happy birthday, Lindsay.
That's right. But, no, and I think, and my family was really, we came to South Carolina with no kids, and we left with two. Family is really important to us as a family, and they were happy. We were close to my wife's parents there in South Carolina, and just year by year, when I was fortunate to have different things presented my way, just kept, you know, how would it be? And there's always the element of the unknown, right? You know, how's it going to be? What's the different situation like? What's it going to be like working for a different boss? And at the end of the day, there was just nothing there that just really attracted me to that opportunity. It just felt like I was in a really, really good situation at Clemson, and obviously working for a guy I know and love, and that I knew, you know, would have my back, and I'd always have his, and that was great, you know. And that's what made the decision in the spring a little bit difficult, but at the same time, you know, I've known Coach Dolan for as long as I've known Coach Brownell, and for him to, you know, present me with this opportunity, I feel very blessed and humbled that I would even, you know, get a phone call. And so it was something that wrestled with for a little bit, but at the same time just felt in my heart that this was the right move at the right time. Was certainly, you know, turned 35 a couple weeks ago, wasn't getting any younger. So knew the longer it went, my window would probably be shrinking a little bit, but at the same time, just excited to be with, you know, another member of the Brownell family and try to help Coach Dolan to the best of our ability to get this thing rolling out here in Kansas City.
Okay, you mentioned the Brownell family. So let's go down the names real quick. You got Billy Donlin.
Okay.
Mark Byington, I think, played for him.
Mark Byington, Georgia Southern,
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, you got Rick Ray at SEMO. You got Earl Grant at College of Charleston. What other head coaches am I missing? Is that everybody or –
Richie Riley. He's now at South Alabama. Yeah, worked for Coach for a couple of years. Trying to think else. There's a ton of high school coaches back in North Carolina. Brett Queens at Hoggard High School. Travis Bate is at West Bladen High School back in southeastern North Carolina. So, that, you know, there's a ton.
Obviously, some women's head coaches.
Women's head coaches, Coach Garrity, Coach Jimmy Garrity, you know, who's at Wofford College, as I alluded to earlier. But, I think one thing, I think anybody that knows Coach Brownell would say, you know, he's a coach's coach. Was just always amazed at the number of people, whether we were at Wilmington, Wright State, Clemson, that would come through just to watch practice. Because he's such a great teacher of the game, and probably known mostly for his prowess on the defensive end of the court. But I mean, it's not to say he's not a great offensive coach, because he is. Coach really, really wrestles a lot with putting the guys in the best position to be successful offensively. He puts a lot of time into that. So he's certainly just a coach's coach. People will come through all the time. When we were fortunate to get to Clemson and have some NBA prospects, you know, it was amazing to see the NBA guys through and just get their feedback after practice or after a workout. Like, wow, really like how you guys do this and do that. It was always good to get that feedback. But
all right, but yeah, Luke, there's guys with national championship rings that don't have coaching trees like Coach Brownell does.
Yeah.
I think he's really tied in with some people that maybe are in the search firm business. I think that probably helps. You know, I think he's super loyal in terms of going to bat for his guys. But, like, you know, what else? Like, what is it that makes his assistants have such a success?
Well, I think he does an unbelievable job, and it's not limited to the assistants. You know, it's everybody on staff. I think he does an unbelievable job of really training guys and alluding to, hey, what it's like to sit in the head chair. And that's just, you know, obviously all the stuff you have to deal with that are just part of the job, you know, dealing with administrators, you know, dealing with the media, dealing with donors, all that stuff, you know, dealing with the scouting, dealing with the game preparation, dealing with players. You know, Coach does an unbelievable job of preparing everybody on staff for all those different types of things. And obviously he does it in a way that's, you know, compliant with a high level of integrity. And I think people have been to the day have seen that. You know, Coach has worked his way up from a Division III player to mid-major graduate assistant, to 8-year mid-major assistant at UNC Wilmington, where they had a ton of success, to taking over a program at UNC Wilmington that had success and then took them to the tournament and 2 out of his 4 years there, then transitioning to Wright State. And taking a program there to the NCAA tournament, and had every single season Coach was at Wright State. They won 20-plus games. So I think people just, they realize that. He does it the right way. He does it with integrity. Not going to cut any corners. And I think that's just widely respected in this industry. And when you work for him, you get to see all that up close and personal every day. And it gives you a lot to put in you and put in your arsenal. For when you do have a chance to be elevated and sit in the head chair or move on to another opportunity.
I think that integrity piece is like a huge part of it, because, you know, when these ADs make hires, the last thing they want to do is sign up for an NCAA investigation or any type of controversy. I mean, that's the last thing. Of course you want to win games, but you also want to keep your school's name out of the headlines for the wrong reasons. And I think, you know, Brad's reputation is doing everything by the book and being a coach of integrity. And when you hire one of his assistants, you know what you're getting. You're getting somebody in that same mold. I think that's probably a big part of it. And it's funny because I think a lot of young assistants or whatever, not just young, I think a lot of coaches feel like, hey, for me to have success, maybe I got to cut some corners, and maybe that'll get me the top 100 recruit or whatever, or the really talented guy that'll take us to the next level. But when in fact, I think the recipe for success for Brad and everyone underneath him is like, let's do it the right way. Let's do what we know how to do that works. And maybe it's not as flashy, but you see the results.
No question. No, I think and being in that environment every day for 15 years, was fortunate to be trained that way. And, you know, obviously we'll continue to operate that way and thankful to have been a part of it for all those years.
All right, enough Brad Brownell. Let's stop talking about him.
Okay.
What has this transition been like for you? 15 seasons and, you know, wearing all kinds of different hats. Now you get the opportunity to wear the assistant coaching hat. So how has that been, both in recruiting and on the court, dealing with that transition?
Yeah, no, it's been awesome. I think being on the court has been great. It's amazing. And, you know, I will say this to anybody, you know, an assistant coaches, aspiring assistant coaches, support staffers, it really is amazing what head coaches see. And they have to see it all, and they do. And then obviously as assistants, we have to help support what they want, and, you know, coach what what they want to emphasize. But that's been really cool to be on the court, you know, sitting, just being at practice every day and being able to have a voice has been really cool. And I think it just helps you have a different level of rapport with the players.
Did it take you a while to find your voice on the court?
Probably a little bit. I think that's probably still an ongoing thing. Just trying to, you know, get more comfortable and being able to speak intelligently. At the end of the day, I think any of us as assistants, we just want we want our players to be successful. And want to give them, you know, try not to overload them, but give them nuggets here that really can help put them in better positions offensively or defensively to make the plays that they need to make or see the things that they need to see. I think that's certainly ongoing, but certainly getting more comfortable the more it's going on. We're 11 practices in here at UMKC, and just excited to be out there. And I think, you know, just bring a level of, you know, enthusiasm and energy to be out there. You know, that's something as a young coach I've really tried to bring. I shouldn't say young. I'm 35. I'm not that young anymore. Some days don't feel like it at all. But just bringing the energy and getting these guys excited about playing. And not that they're not. It's not to say that they're not. They these guys have been great here. They've worked really hard. They're trying to do everything we ask them to do. Obviously, everybody's in their first year under the Coach Tomlin system. So everybody's adjusting, coaching staff included. But Coach is doing a really good job of, you know, not overreacting and taking everything day by day as it comes and just being who he is as a person, as the head coach. And I think that really, you know, forces you to be who you are personality wise as an assistant. Again, just making sure that we're echoing his messaging daily.
What were some of the things that you kind of, I know you're just 11 practices in, but you guys also got a full off season of workouts in as well. Like, what are some of the things that you kind of adjusted in terms of finding your voice on the court? You know, because that's such a big thing for guys transitioning to that role. You know, and I know you're, you know, what is some of like the internal feedback that you've given yourself, you know, whether it's like be briefer or talk in this tone or don't do this or don't call people out.
I think just being very direct and being honest with what you see and what you see, you know, I'm fortunate to, you know, look, Coach Brunell and Coach Donald are two different people. They have two different personalities. And with that, there's two different sets of terminology. You know, I've been around one system where we've used, you know, basically the same terms for the better part of 15 seasons. And now coming into a new place, you know, the terminology is a little bit different. Some of it's somewhat similar in some aspects because the same family tree, if you will. But some of it's very different. And not everything is taught the same. So just adjusting to that, I think has been key. And then too, and just with the players, I tried to, you know, for better or for worse, you know, I tried to talk to as many people as I could that had made the transition from the admin side to the coaching side, and just really rack their brain on what helped them, what didn't help them, what were some of the adjustments they felt like they had to make. I think that helped me because in some ways you don't really know what you're getting into, even though I've been around a lot of great assistants in 15 years with Coach Brunell. Had never really been in that role, so didn't really know what to expect. But I think just really trying to be who I am, not fake it, because I think at the end of the day, you know, the players are smart. They can see, you know, they can see right through some of the stuff if you're trying to fake it or not be who you really are. So just really try to focus on that and then really try to help them with, you know, two or three things daily that they feel can not only help our team but also help their game as well.
And what about on the recruiting front? Has that been – I know, like, in that support staff role, and you were director of recruiting at Clemson and probably very involved in the transfer market, but you know, how has that transition been for you?
Yeah, no, I think being in the recruiting role has certainly helped transition that, and that really opened my eyes to how recruiting really worked, and you know, just how you know how important it was to lock in on, you know, recruits and their parents, and just try to help the staff by bringing as much information to the table as possible. Because I think that experience really taught me that recruiting is really just it's an information war, and just always trying to bring the best and most accurate information to the table daily as possible. So that was really great, and obviously was fortunate to, you know, be right there at Clemson with Clemson Football, who does an unbelievable job of, you know, their recruiting organization and management, and how they do is to really be able to pick their brains, and then how we could tweak that to fit the Clemson basketball Coach Brownell model. I think that was really significant as well. And then obviously coming here, you know, mid-major recruiting, had not been around that for the better part of, 9 years or so, but just kind of tried to pick up where we left off. And I think it's just important with recruiting relationships to manage those daily. Talking to high school coaches, talking to AAU coaches, talking to different workout guys, trainers, just always managing those relationships, and to try to figure out what's going on. You know, calling, I think being able to call guys and figure out what's going on with different recruits in a 3-5 hour radius of your campus is critical. And just being able to make those relationships and be able to connect with those guys, probably when maybe they don't have a player that you can recruit or anything. I think that seems to go a long way a little bit too. But just felt like managing a recruiting list and being able to bring names to the table, felt like that was something that was able to transition to pretty smoothly here by virtue of being in that role at Clemson last season.
What are some differences that you've seen between like recruiting at the high major level and recruiting at the mid-major level?
I think, you know, with mid-major guys, I think some of them, you know, I think kids today nowadays, the kids certainly like to be recruited. I think there's a lot of kids that like to be recruited. They like the attention of it. They like the aspect of it. Obviously, you know, recruiting to Clemson, high major, you know, those guys, I mean, showing those guys love, being there, you know, the personalized graphics, all that stuff is good, and it carries a lot of weight. Obviously, coming down, coming to mid-major level, you know, sometimes you don't have all those resources, so you've got to get a little more creative in how you communicate and how you reach out and who you talk to and all that. I would say in some cases, here at the mid-major level, it's been a little more, you know, just to recruit in their parents. Or at the high major level, it might be a high school coach or an AAU coach or, you know, a trainer or workout guy or something like that. Not to say that that's – not trying to put it in a cookie-cutter grouping or anything like that. And note, I think anybody would tell you, no, very few recruitments are exactly the same. Every recruitment is different, and I think that's where you have to do the homework and get in there and figure out, you know, who are the decision-makers and influencers and who do you need to talk to try to help sway that kid to get to your campus.
Well, Lucas, I appreciate you taking the time to jump on, man, and wish you nothing but the best of luck up in Kansas City. I tell this story, you know, I don't know that I've told it on our podcast, but I tell it on other podcasts, you know, when I have an opportunity to talk about how we got Rising Coaches started. But, you know, like when we were at Clemson and Brad's staff came in, you guys came in, and I was the GA, yeah, and kind of in flux, not knowing if I was going to stay on staff or not. And you guys hadn't kicked me out of the office. So I was just kind of, but you guys weren't giving me responsibilities either, because you were feeling me out, not knowing who I was. You know, this is the first week or 2 weeks on campus month. So I would just sit in that video room and sitting on the whiteboard, kind of getting the logistics of our first conference started. And it was all just kind of an idea. That would be cool if, you know, but we weren't totally committed to doing it. And then you came in one day and you were like, hey, this is pretty cool. How about, do you guys want Mark Moorfield of, you know, assistant coach at Baylor to come speak? And I was like, sure. Yeah. All right. And that was it. Like we had a speaker. So I was like, well, shit, I guess we're going to have a conference, and I guess we're going to do this thing. So you really are the reason this whole thing got started. You pushed us over the edge.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that. But, no, I think just really, you know, what a great opportunity for young guys to just have a network and, you know, a way to get advice about the business. I think that's really cool. I think a lot of people out there trying to break into the business, but might not necessarily know how, or might not necessarily know who. So I've always felt that Rising Coaches was a great, great resource for guys like that. You know, obviously I've tried to recommend it to as many people as I could, just because I believe what it stands for and what it does. And, you know, credit to you for taking the task to take this on full time. And I know you're going to do an awesome job with it, and look forward to still helping Rising Coaches in any way I possibly can from here on out.
Thanks, Lucas. Good luck.
Adam, thanks, buddy. Appreciate you having me on.
All right.